I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. John Metcalf joins me now. The distinguished editor recently published Off the Record, a book that features conversations between Mr. Metcalf and six noted Canadian writers, Carolyn Adderson, Kristen Dunnion, Cynthia Flood, Shana Lambert, Elise Levine, and Kathy Page. The conversations are about how each of these writers arrived at writing, and they're candid and revelatory about the work of a writer, or family life, or the process of working with John Metcalf himself. These are rich conversations yielding relatable advice and inspiration for the writer or non-writer alike. Accompanying the conversations, edited by Mr. Metcalf, is a short story written by each writer, providing further insight into the craft. John Metcalf has been one of the leading editors in Canada for more than five decades, editing over 200 books, including 18 volumes of the Best Canadian Stories anthology. He is also the author of more than a dozen works of fiction and nonfiction, including Finding Again in the World, Vital Signs, and Aesthetic Underground, among others. In 2004, he was appointed a member of the Order of Canada. He is the senior fiction editor at Biblioasis, who also published this new book. We taped this interview 3 weeks ago with Mr. Metcalf joining me from his home in Ottawa. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, John Metcalf. Mr. Metcalf, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. How did you choose these six writers?
Five of them were people that I have been working with for many, many years, and are close personal friends. You know, in the process of what should I say? I mean, the relationship is more than just, you know, a literary thing.
Right.
I mean, it's, you know, we write back and forth and chat to each other, and, you know, and I'm always full of admiration for their work, and some of it goes back a very long time, and especially with Caroline Adderson. I published her first book, and Cynthia Flood, we've been very close in more recent years, and Elise Levine, too, I published her first book, and the only one that, you know, is a more recent writer, and that's because she's much younger than the others, is Kristen Dunnion. But I was very attracted to this story collection that we put together. And, you know, I think she's very, very talented. And I think there's, you know, much, much more work to come. In fact, I know there is. She's working on a new book, I think, at the moment, called The Anarchist's Handbook. Yeah, so really, the other five cases, it's relationships that go back really quite a long way, and because of that, I mean, I don't have any qualms about you know, what I asked them, or, you know, if I pushed them in this direction or that. I mean, I had a latitude in this, in that I didn't have to be particularly polite to them, or, you know, tread very carefully around any areas or anything like that. I mean, we're friendly enough that they know what I was trying to do and cooperated.
Yeah, the responses, they're often, they sound intimate, and you know, somebody who's interviewed authors over the years, I couldn't help but think that I couldn't get that stuff out of them, and then that's why I was curious about this relationship that you have with these authors, and it's because you know them that you get this stuff out of them, and in a way, they like you, don't they?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is that I'd know the questions to ask them because we're all writers, and You know, I know their work and they know mine. And, you know, and we have respect for each other as well as writers. And, you know, so they know that I'm not, you know, don't have any prurient interest in, you know, poking my nose into their private lives. But, I mean, if I do want something, you know, emotional out of them or you know, out of the ordinary, I'll push, and if they tell me to back away, I would, you know, but that never cropped up at all. I mean, I think all of them just felt that, you know, that this was an interesting engagement. You know, and I use that word deliberately. I mean, you know, I mean, it was a sort of a coming together of my interests and their interests. So, you know, it all just flows together. It's all part of a much larger relationship, you know.
Yeah, and it reads beautifully. I'll ask you about how you conducted the conversations in just a sec. But have you got children?
Yes.
I ask that question because I'm fascinated by your interest in these authors and their parents. It seems like a logical place to start because you want to know what that relationship is like and how that might influence the pursuit of a writer life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And do you think that always has a connection, say?
Well, what I was interested—I mean, probably the first series of questions, you know, that I would have asked them. There isn't a written record of this because, you know, I mean, we just, you know, exchange letters all the time. But I was asking about that because I'm in, you know, I mean, being a really good writer, it doesn't come out of nowhere. It's not something that, you know, when you're an adult and you've grown up, you're a young adult, that you suddenly wake up one morning and say, I know, I think I'll be a writer. You know, usually somebody who becomes a writer is somebody who has either you know, followed a pattern of somebody that they know, and or they come from a household where there was a lot of reading going on, where the parents were very well educated, where you know, there was a warm environment for a child to grow up in and learn things and have adults around them as well who would, you know, do things like take them to libraries and say, you know, did you ever read this book? Or, you know, look at that painting, isn't that interesting? Or, you know, look how this works. Or, you know, whereas, you know, I mean, there are some writers who, against extreme odds, I mean, become writers, but usually they come out of a family background that's helpful and that gives them sustenance and you know, also where education is important to the people, to the parents. And so they take pride in a child's, you know, accomplishments in school or out of school activities, you know, that kind of thing.
Yes, Cynthia Flood comes to mind because her father, of course, was the historian Donald Creighton. But there's a moment in your conversation with her that fascinated me because she had come out here to Vancouver, and I think she'd done some teaching or she'd done some secretarial work, and then there was a moment where she was. It's a lovely moment that she described, where she's seized by narrative, as she writes it. And she realizes that that's what she wants to do and that's what she can do. And
yes.
For some of these writers, there is that one moment, isn't there, that provokes them to pursue the writing life.
Yes. Cynthia's an interesting case because she's much older than the other people in the book. She came out of a background where, you know, her relationship with her father was, warm in some ways and very fraught in others. Yeah. But, you know, he could be very domineering and, I think, depressive charming at times, and you know, and then suddenly, I think she says somewhere in the book that, you know, there could be sudden storms of rage and everything, and I think in some way this sort of undermined her emotionally in some kind of way, and she spent a lot of time, you know, in politics and in left wing politics. Yeah. And union matters and, you know, such like. And I think there just came a point where she had a private school education. So, she was very well educated, and her mother was a writer as well. And her mother, I think, gave her a great deal of emotional support. And after, I think, I can't remember whether it's in the book or not, but she you know, she was doing all this sort of secretarial work and, you know, working for the cause and, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly one day she just felt, you know, that there was something very important missing from her life and she realized that she wanted to write and you know, sort of started then writing stories which, you know, that certainly took my attention with her first work, but I got to know her shortly after that early work, but then she started to send me work, and I, you know, there'd be much back and forth and discussion of scenes and how you did this and, you know, whether dialogue could do that and, you know, and all this sort of technical stuff that writers do talk about. And suddenly her work began to get deeper and deeper and deeper and more and more and more evolved, really, and, you know, getting into experimental areas where, you know, she'd not been going before. And so she moved from being a sort of fairly conventional modernist writer, though a good one, to being something really, really important, I think. And so we did, three, four books together, I think, at Biblioasis. And, She was very complicated, different from the other writers, I think possibly just because of her age and possibly because of that very, I don't know, repressive background, maybe.
Yeah, and it's fascinating to see the relationships that they have with their parents. Like Kathy Page, for example, she writes about how, as her parents got older, how their own personal relationship between the mother and the father, how that turned out.
Yeah.
As opposed to, say, you know, when the parents first courted over letters, and how that might have influenced how she viewed her writing.
Well, the very interesting thing about Kathy was that her mother, her father was, I think, very understanding, but I think a man that we can sort of you know, decipher from what she's written about that relationship, was a man who probably gave way to his wife far, far too much, you know, in her moods and her outrageousness and everything. And she, it reached a point when Kathy was like 15 or thereabouts that things were so bad between her and her mother, who was so domineering and sort of crazy in a way, I think she describes a scene in the book, as I recall, where they were fighting about something or other, and her mother was saying, "Go upstairs to your room," and she was saying that she wouldn't, and they were on the stairs, like, pushing at each other backwards and forwards, and Kathy thought, "What are we going to do next? Bite each other?" And it got so bad, actually, that neighbours interfered in the relationship and sort of, you know, were getting worried about what was going on. And eventually, she was going to a grammar school in England, which would be, you know, a selected school, not a general entry school. And one of the teachers there, who was unmarried and a very kind woman, an art teacher there, offered to take Kathy to live with her and finish her schooling and that kind of thing, because, you know, the home life had just become impossible. So, I mean, that's an extraordinary story. And this this woman was, you know, a painter, which Kathy took up for a while and became, you know, she actually had, like, exhibitions when she was at university. And but this woman, you know, gave her a great freedom and in how she lived, and also sort of fed everything that was, you know, artistic in her. And you know, so she became, you know, a substitute mother, and one who gave her exactly what her real mother couldn't have given her.
Yeah. You alluded to a moment ago, John, that a lot of these conversations happened via letter, so I assume via email.
Right. Well,
when I started the book and I was reading Carolyn Addison, she seems very conversational, that I had to assume that a lot of those, what she said had happened, say, in person or over the phone even.
Some of it, yes. And some of it was actually written by her before all this started as a venture. She organized, you know, all this. I put a lot of work into it as well. I mean, it's quite evident. And, you know, which is very much her. She very organized, very disciplined, very, very hardworking. And if she commits to doing something, she'll do the best that she can, which is a considerable best. We're just doing a new book of hers that's coming out this year, and it's just a masterpiece. It's just absolutely wonderful. And Caroline and I have been, you know, really close friends and close together for many, many years now. I did her first book, Bad Imaginings, and also worked a great deal on her first novel, and I've written to her for the last, I don't know, 30, yeah, 40 years, whatever it is now. And so, you know, we and I phone her, you know, and she phones me, and we chat about this, that, and the other, and you know, things that are happening, what people are doing, and help each other as best we can.
So you're obviously, your work in this and eliciting the responses is evident. But as you write in the introduction, the scaffolding of your question, say, does not appear. And was that deliberate?
Oh, yeah. I always, you know, when I read print versions of interviews that are done with people, in you know, in magazines or in books or what have you, I always felt that the printed question and then the answer, and the printed question and then the answer, was irritating, you know, and that I would be much more interested to read what I managed to produce in this book, which is by stripping out the questions that I asked and patching things together and, you know, and smoothing the shape over, that has a sort of, you know, as the thing has the appearance of, you know, a direct talking to the audience,
to the reader,
it's much more interesting, and it flows so much more easily. And there's also, it gives, I think, a greater sense of intimacy as well,
yeah.
Because the person asking the questions is effaced. And, you know, this is precisely what I wanted. I mean, I'm not interested in what I had to say. I was always interested in what they had to say.
The book also chronicles the perils of publishing. We see in the book, as a number of these authors talk about houses that they published at that have since folded or folded even in the process of the books coming out. Does the future of Canadian writing, fiction especially, because these six writers primarily write fiction, do you think the future looks bleak for writers of their ilk, say?
Well, I mean, it's always been bleak. If you knew the sales figures of some of these books, which I would say, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, and I've been doing this for a very, very long time, I would say that these writers are among the best in the country. And if you knew the numbers that they sold, I mean, it's pathetic. But it's always been that way, and in Canada particularly, and the problem, I mean, you know, because there's a very small buying audience
right.
in this country, and you know, and the problem is made even worse in that the short story is a form which, you know, in modernist practitioners of it is not an easy, comfortable one. I mean, you don't settle down with an Alice Munro story and say, well, you know, I've had a rough day. I think I'll sit down and have a beer and read a short story. I mean, it's, you know, the short story is not a popular genre. But the weird thing is that working through the small presses, you know, the literary presses, it's the one form of Canadian writing that's the most successful and that is the most, in literary terms, you know, the most important, I think, much
yeah.
more important than novels. And there have been far more really good short stories than there have been novels, or poetry, come to that. And, you know, a lot of this experience that I have had as an editor is because, you know, for 17 years I ran editorially the Porcupine's Quill, which until it folded was probably the best in the country. And then when Tim Ingster announced that he was closing the press, I started working with Daniel Wells at Biblioasis and helped him build that into what I think is now probably the best literary press that Canada has ever had. And so a lot of these writers, you know, I mean, we've been together for so long, and but they're dependent on the small presses. I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, the book that we are publishing this fall of Caroline Addison's, you know, a new collection of stories and maybe her very best ever, she had to offer the book under contractual terms to Random House, which was, you know, her previous publisher for two or three novels that didn't do very well, we quickly were informed that we could bid on the book by her agent that we
yeah.
could bid on the book because Random House or HarperCollins or whatever it was, I don't know, one or the other of
right.
them, said, you know, we are no longer publishing short story collections.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I mean, we're in that very strange place where the big presses, you know, the big famous international presses won't touch serious novels, and they won't touch short stories at all. And so the very best writing that the country's ever produced is being produced by small publishers that most people have never heard of. I mean, it's it's a slightly weird situation, but that's the situation as it is, and as it has been for years, actually, now.
So as such, if a young person comes up to you, John, and says that they want to be a writer, what do you tell them?
I tell them, good. Good for you. You know, and what's your day job going to be? you know, it's really funnier. You know, I mean, and the really serious ones, I mean, don't even ask that. I mean, they know, you know, they know what that's, they know what that answer's going to be before they even start. I mean, you know, I mean, if somebody's going to be any good, I mean, they'll have learned all these things.
Right.
Before they even start, they'll know what the markets are. And they'll know what the magazines are that still would consider short stories, which are all, you know, very small circulation, university-associated magazines, subsidized, of course. But I was reading something the other day that made me laugh because it's so close to what you just asked me. The artist Ben Sharn. Talking about the difference between professional and amateur painters, he had this to say, and I just happened to have this on my lap because I was reading this book. An amateur is an artist who supports himself with outside jobs which enable him to paint. A professional is someone whose wife works to enable him to paint. I think I'm going to take up quoting that to young ones that I get in touch with, suggesting that they get themselves a wife quick. But no, it's impossible to make a living from, you know, doing literary work.
Yeah.
And if you know, do make a living from writing, it's probably because you're writing appalling stuff, which is popular.
You're a writer of fiction yourself, John. What have you learned from these writers in particular that you found useful? I mean, habits, for example, do they influence you in any way?
No, I don't think so. I mean, because the thing is that I am in the main, you know, 25 or so years or maybe a bit more older than they are, so... I went through all this before they'd even got started. So, you know, so no, I mean, they don't teach me anything about that. But, I mean, each one individually teaches me new things about how to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, constructions of some of their stories opens my eyes, you know. It goes both ways, you know, and I teach them, and they teach me. They don't teach me as much as I teach them, because I'm older and I've been doing it for longer. But, I mean, you know, when they send me stories, you know, in the mail, which, you know, the way these things usually go, they'll send me a group of stories over a year or a year and a half or something like that, and individually, you know, as they finish them, and so I involve myself in their process of writing as it's going along, you know, and I'll go through with some of them, not all, because some of them are very meticulous about the way they write. Cynthia Flood, particularly so. But, you know, so with some of them, I write back and say things like, you know, you cannot say this. You cannot use this word to describe what it is that you're wanting to describe. Or I might say, you know, for God's sake, stop using these similes, you know, because they're just clever and they clog up the works. And if you find the right verb, it'll do all the job for you and faster and harder. And sometimes I will say things like, this word that you have used here, you think, means this, whereas in fact it does not. it means that. Consult the Oxford English Dictionary. And, you know, and we go on like this, and, you know, and then things will come back with those things taken care of and amended. So, yeah, it, you know, we're backwards and forwards. I teach mainly, but I also learn from them, and they learn from me, and, you know, and it produces a very intimate relationship, you know, because, and it has to be based on respect and trust. And, you know, if they didn't think that my opinion was worth having, none of this would work.
Yeah.
And if I didn't see that a manuscript which I receive in the mail is imperfect but could become something much, much better with some help, that's something that I would move into. And I think, you know, we both did derive pleasures from the relationship.
Yeah, respect and trust is something that comes through as a reader of this collection. It's just a delight to see how this relationship works, how it evolves. And as a reader, it's just fun to see how this relationship, and it is long distance in a lot of cases, how that comes together. And I can't see how this is not useful for someone aspiring to the writing life. I guess, is that the audience that you wrote it for?
Well, really, I think I had the impulse to do the book was really to say, I mean, I think all these writers are pretty terrific, you know, and you know, immensely enjoyable work to read, and the things that they have to say are so interesting, their lives are so interesting. My impulse in doing it was you know, the impulse that I have with so much of the work that I do, which is to say to people, look, for God's sake, there's this wonderful stuff out there that you don't know and that you haven't encountered, and you won't encounter it through the public library or, you know, anyone else telling you about it. And so I wanted to say, look, get to know these people and read their books, you know, and it'll bring you so much pleasure. And I wanted to say also, you know, people talk about, you know, Canadian writing and this, that, and the other, and, you know, there's Canada Reads bloody program on the CBC, and, you know, which is, I think, ludicrous. And, you know, I want to say, you know, quietly, look into an Indigo or, you know, Chapters or somewhere, if they still sell books. And, you know, see if you can find copies of these. And if not, you know, you can get them with a little bit of trouble. And read them, because this is really the best of what Canada's got to offer in literary terms. And so I wanted to promote them. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's important that the literate section of Canadian society, small as it is, knows what's really out there and what's really good. And, you know, and we've reached that dreadful point now where the newspapers, I mean, are simply not reviewing books anymore, and there are no magazines left. And, you know, I mean, all that's left is, you know, God knows what, little literary magazines that are read only by students and a few other sort of stalwart people who read. But, you know, in the main, there's no way that these writers can connect with the larger Canadian society, you know. I mean, even the days when people like Margaret Lawrence and, you know, and, you know, she was able to get in touch with a large section of the population, because there were magazines then, and there were newspapers, and there were, you know, even the CBC was, you know, broadcasting, you know, Robert Weaver's anthology program, and, you know, and there were, you know, all that sort of stuff going on. Now all that has stopped. Yeah. And, you know, so this is really where we're really working now is like, you know, this is the underground. And, you know, we're sending, or you know, it's sort of like we're living in Russia and this is Samizdat, you know, publications which are sort of almost underground. And very often the only way that you can get people to read these things is by word of mouth, by saying, you know, you haven't read that? Good Lord, you know, what you're missing. It's so terrific, you know, and, you know. You know, and if you say to friends of yours, you really ought to read this book because it's really very interesting. I mean, that's kind of the, you know, I take the long view that you know, in time, this stuff will find an audience, but it's never going to be the audience that there once existed.
Yeah. Yeah. John, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you today. I so appreciate your time. This is an important book, and I found myself enjoying it a great deal. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with it and everything else.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
The book is called Off the Record. It's published by Biblioasis. It's editor John Metcalf. Join me on the line from Ottawa in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.